If at the end of this message there is a hunger in you to follow Jesus Christ because of His beauty and wisdom, then I will know the Holy Spirit has been present. Two controversy stories on the Sabbath. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. When the Pharisees saw it, they said to Jesus, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." He said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests. Have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." And he went from there and entered their synagogue, and behold, there was a man with a withered hand, and they asked Jesus, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" So they might accuse him. He said to them, "What man of you, if he has one sheep, and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value is a man than a sheep? So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And the man stretched it out, and it was restored, whole like the other. And the Pharisees went out and took counsel against Jesus, how to destroy him. Jesus, aware of this, withdrew from there. Many followed him, and he healed them all and ordered them not to make him known. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah, "My son whom I have chosen, my beloved, with whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit on him. He shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not wrangle or cry aloud, nor will one hear his voice in the streets. He will not break a bruised reed or quench a smoldering wick till he brings justice to victory. And in his name will the Gentiles hope." This is the word of the Lord. Some years ago, the New York publishing house of Grosset and Dunlap brought together 28 scholars whose task was to agree on the 100 most significant events of history and then to rank them. After long debate, the panel reported the discovery of America and the opening of Europe to the New World as the most significant event ever. Second was the invention of movable type by Gutenberg and the mass production of books that followed. 11 events tied for third. In the fourth place was the U.S. Constitution, the development of ether for surgical anesthesia, the X-ray to see inside the body, the invention of the airplane, and the life of Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus tied for fourth with 14 events ahead of him. Dr. James Francis has a different opinion, and I quote from his reflection now known as One Solitary Life. "Here is a man who was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman, and grew up in another village. He worked in a carpenter shop till he was 30. Then for 3 years he was an itinerant preacher. He never owned a home, never wrote a book, never held office, never had a family, never went to college, never traveled more than 200 miles from the place he was born. He never did one of the things that usually accompany greatness. He had no credentials but himself. While he was still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends ran away. One of them denied him. He was turned over to his enemies. He went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed on a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, the executioner's gamble for the only piece of property he had on earth, his coat. When he was dead, he was laid in a barred grave through the pity of a friend." And then these words, 19 and now 20 centuries have come and gone, and today he is the centerpiece of the human race and the leader of the column of progress. I'm far within the mark when I say that all the armies that ever marched, all the navies that were ever built, all the parliaments that ever sat, and all the kings that ever reigned put together have not affected the life of man on this earth so powerfully as that one solitary life. One life. 3 years of public witness. before 12 men who saw his every word and deed, leading to 4 Gospels because his life is too big for any one of them, and 1 conviction, 1 life, 3 years, 12 witnesses, 4 Gospels, 1 conviction, that in this solitary life, the God of Israel has opened his heart to the world and through the Holy Spirit invited people to come home to God, to have sins forgiven, to have the power of evil broken, to be joined to a new people, to have the Holy Spirit come in you and begin to change your character in the direction of love of God and neighbor. Jesus is all the divine life that can be poured into one solitary life. And he is not just a prophet. He's God the Son assuming flesh in the womb of the Virgin. He is divine revelation at ground level. His life did not just bubble up out of the soup of humanity. He came from outside. He is God the Son. To do business with Jesus is to do business with God at the ontological level of being. And this is one of the major distinctions between classical Christianity and traditional Islam. Islam calls him Isa, that he was a prophet. He was a prophet of Allah who points to the greater prophet who is to come, and that is Muhammad. That surprises Christians to learn that Muslims believe in the virgin birth. They also believe that Jesus worked wonders. But in their book written 500 years after the New Testament, it is clear that they do not believe that Jesus died on the cross. He was substituted by Simon who carried the cross, or maybe even by Judas the betrayer, but Jesus did not die. He was assumed to heaven before his death. He is honored as a prophet, but he is not the crucified Son of God who died for the sins of the world. And if Jesus did not die, there is no sacrifice for sins, and we are still unforgiven. And we are still waiting on a revelation. And we do not know how fully God wishes to identify with us apart from the death of Jesus on the cross. And if there's no cross, there's no resurrection. And if there's no resurrection, Jesus has not been vindicated in his post-mortem existence. He's just the next prophet. Now, in this world, we had better learn to live at peace with all fair-minded people of any other faith. And that is part of the genius of America. But I fear that in our political correctness and in our Christian loss of confidence and in our desire to live at peace, we have papered over too many of the contradictions. Because if Jesus is who the church claims him to be, if he is God come to earth, if he lived out the kingdom, if his was a self-sacrifice for sins, after which God raised him from the dead, then our hope must be in him and nowhere else. It's hard to understand the meaning of the Sabbath for the Jews. It's like we feel about the flag and how the English feel about the Queen. It's the symbol of who they are. It's a day of rest. It's a day to remember that our God rescued us. Have you ever noticed how religion, it's easy to forget and make secondary things first? And so some folk in Jesus' day, the Pharisees, said, it's not enough to keep the Sabbath. We must come up with hundreds of regulations about what the Sabbath means and what you can't do and how far you can walk and that you can't harvest, and we will be the policemen on God's people. We will be the Sabbath police. And so one Sabbath, Jesus and his retinue are headed somewhere. They're going somewhere to minister the kingdom, and they haven't even had time to eat, and nobody's carrying a lunch, and it's the late spring, and the ripe grain is in the fields along the roads, and so the disciples are hungry, and Judaism allowed people to glean, and so the disciples go over and they break off the heads of the grain and they rub them in their hands, and they eat them much like you would eat a bag of peanuts. And they have walked beyond the Sabbath distance, and they have done reaping, and they have violated the rules. Well, Jesus, why are your disciples violating our regulations and breaking the Sabbath and setting a bad example for the people? Pretty soon, everybody will be doing this and there won't be any more Sabbath. And Jesus said, well, don't you remember from the Bible where David went with his bunch of ruffians when Saul was chasing them and ate the 12 loaves of the presence? And I'm greater than David. And don't you know that the priests work on the Sabbath in the temple, and I'm greater than the temple? And don't you know that God doesn't care about your religion unless it's rooted in mercy, and I'm mercy? And don't you know that I'm the Lord of the Sabbath? Now, Jesus could not have been more outrageous. I'm greater than David. I'm greater than the temple. I am the mercy of God, and the Sabbath is my day. So guys, quit complaining and get used to it. You know where Jesus was going? He was going to a synagogue on the Sabbath to worship, because there was a man there who had a withered hand, and God was sending the kingdom his way to raise his hand from the dead. And when Jesus got there, the Pharisees said, we know that you do this stuff on the Sabbath, and we're really annoyed. I mean, you've already ruined our regulations by letting your guys eat along the way and travel and reap. Is it lawful, Jesus, to do good on the Sabbath? Why not just wait 24 hours, Jesus? Why not wait till the first day of the week and heal him? See, they don't question he can heal him. They just don't want to do it on the day to mess up their regulations. Sometimes I'm concerned when people seem to be more concerned that there's a typo in the bulletin than did we worship. Or that have we kept all the local traditions, or have we been welcoming to people? And Jesus said, which one of you, if you're a poor man and have only one sheep, and the sheep goes in the ditch, you won't go get it? I say, please, if you've got 1,000 sheep, you can be a philosopher. But if you've got one, to lose that one is to hurt your family. And then Jesus said something startling. Of how much more value is a man than a sheep? Now, some of the philosophies out there in a world that I call deep ecology, deep green, are pantheistic. They believe that everything is of equal value, and that a human being is worth no more than a sea turtle. And so we protect. I've been at Kiowa. I have watched those things come up. I have watched those little eggs pop out like ping pong balls. I've watched the federal government protect those eggs, which they ought to. But it concerns me that we spend more energy and life and legal protections on protecting little ping pong eggs than we do babies in the womb. And when I see people who are concerned about homeless cats but would never help a homeless person, I wonder what's going on. And people who put their dogs in doggy motels for the weekend that resemble the Hilton, but they wouldn't give any money to feed the hungry. What's wrong when we've forgotten that as important and loving as animals are, they're not equal to a human being? Jesus said, how much more worth is a man than a sheep? It doesn't mean you abuse the sheep. It doesn't mean you're not humane to animals. It doesn't mean you don't eat free-range chicken if you want to. It means that in the biblical ordering of the world, at the pinnacle, just south of God, is human beings made in His image, who have unique dignity and claim upon us all, and then all the creatures for which we must care. When I get to heaven, I want to see my dad. I want to see my friend Mike. I want to see my grandmother Lida. This is before I go in. This is just at the gate. I want to have a long debate with the Apostle Paul on his use of ancient rhetoric. And I want to see my childhood dog, Trusty. Who got in without having to have someone die for his sins, since dogs don't sin, only their owners. And then to prove how much a man was worth, Jesus said to the man with the withered hand, stretch it out. And this is, it hadn't worked in a long time. It withered. And when he began to try to move that hand, the Holy Spirit fulfilled the words of the Son from the Father. And there was a miracle of recreation. And the man stretched out his hand, and it was made whole, just like the other. I'm glad for scientists that can tell me what's possible in a closed cause and effect universe through scientific rigor. I'm also glad for Jesus, who can tell me what can happen in an open universe with the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And that hand came out, and people went, And I believe that that night, the index finger of that withered hand wiped the tear off the cheek of his loving wife. And she felt the embrace of both his hands. And the next day when he woke up, he looked at his hands and he picked up his tools and he went back to work. And he was a man once more. At the center of this faith are not rules and regulations. At the center of our faith is the person of Jesus. A wild man. And if you put God in a box, Jesus will blow it up. Because he is committed to one thing, to obeying the Father and to getting the power of the Spirit into every shriveled heart of a Pharisee or every withered hand of a man who can't work. And so, on this Thanksgiving week, I invite you to reflect on our prosperity and on our peril. And I invite you to reflect on Jesus Christ. And I hope that wherever your family gathers, that you will be the one to reach out and take the hands of everyone and go around the circle and make every person say something for which they are thankful. And then you will pray to the God of Jesus Christ that His mercy may be present in our homes and in our churches and in our neighborhoods and across our country. And I think I knew why I cried for years when I played that song. Because it is the heart of God that there be a great harvest and that we are His seed sown across the land. So I'm going to skip the song, but I'm going to invite you to take a minute of silence and let the Holy Spirit pierce your heart.